your digital book club.
Hello.
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 Welcome.
Welcome to Young Adultish.
Your digital book club.
Yep, that's right. It is digital. It is about books. It is a club. And we are young adults. Ish.
And there's one more of us today.
So also ish.
I'm Allie.
I'm Ginny.
And I'm Bethany.
And yeah. Bethany is from
Prince Sky Fan Pod.
Yay!
What Bethany does, all she does is Marissa Beyer books. She goes super in-depth on these books. She goes chapter by chapter, hitting all the tiny details that even Marissa Beyer herself misses and doesn't always intend.
And you're
you guys on, should seriously listen to the episodes I do with her, because like one of the last ones I did with her, I asked her something and she's like, I don't know, at this point I think you're more of an expert than I am. And I was like that's might amazing. Be the I think I've just accomplished every goal I've ever had in my life.
There you go. That's all we ever want.
I'll never top that moment. Hit my peak.
I had this moment where we talked about my top five. And I mentioned one of my favorite authors, and I made the post on Instagram, and they commented on the post. I was like, oh, my God. And that was my moment. That was my made it moment.
Yeah, so when Marissa found out about the podcast, that was, like, a huge thing for me. And then when she was like, I'd love to do an episode together, I was like, oh, my God, are you serious?
It's funny how these things blow up without us, like, being aware of them, right?
Yes. I mean, I honestly, like, when we first started, I really thought it was just going to be, like, people that we knew that would listen, you know, like my sisters listen and my mom listens and stuff like that. And I thought maybe there'd be, like, a niche community that would listen, but we blew up pretty quickly. Like, I started the Instagram before I started the podcast, and before our first episode even came out, we had over 100 followers, and there were people that were just, like, when's the first episode coming out? I can't wait. I'm super excited. We're at like over 35,000 downloads. I have like 3,500 followers.
Yeah.
Thank you. So it blows up really fast sometimes.
And you're like over 200 episodes now, right? You just hit that milestone?
Yeah, I just hit 111. I think 109 came out today. And then tomorrow I'm recording episode 111, which is also
kind of crazy. Recently that you posted, maybe it was 2 years. Maybe that was
2 years. Yeah.
Yes. That was it.
2 years on March or on May 19th. So, which is also crazy.
That is crazy. But congrats on that.
And it's only like a drop in the bucket because there's so much. I'm going to do every book she writes, and she promised me she's not done writing anytime soon. So
there you go.
This has become like a lifelong commitment, especially once we finally get like movies and TV shows. And I'll start covering those too.
I hope so.
I'll just be like 70 years old, still doing a podcast about young adult books.
I mean, so what
is the goal? That's a dream, you know?
And I sort of alluded to this conversation in our last episode, Cinder Part 1, because we are talking about Cinder Part 2 today, in case we haven't mentioned that, which we may not have.
I don't think we did. I think we forgot. We just decided
Cinder Part 2, not a spoiler-free podcast.
Right.
Hi to Bethany.
Hi.
But young adult fiction is new to the world, and we're sort of in this space where we, as the millennial generation, are in this place where we've just collectively decided not to grow up.
Which and I'm fine companies, with.
Yes, exactly. But companies are now having to adapt to this. And they're having to produce like onesie pajamas in adult sizes. Because we don't want to go buy boring old granny panties. We want, I want to sleep dressed like a cat, thank you. And just all of these little things that companies are now having to account for. One of those things is YA fiction. It kind of fits into this genre of we're just not abandoning the stuff that we would typically abandon as part of quote-unquote adulthood. And the world's having to adjust around that. And I think that the world of 70-year-old people doing podcasts and whatever else on young adult novels, I'm so here for that world.
It's interesting, it's too, because as a librarian, you know, we discuss a lot, like, the difference between what people might think a genre is and what a genre actually is, because something that we've always struggled with is young adult being considered a genre when it's not a genre, it's a medium, it's a like format. And the concept that it's strictly isolated to a young adult community is so frustrating because you get so much judgment from that. And it's mm-hmm. like, you know, the target, whoever, how you define a young adult book is in librarian terms, I should say, is the age of the protagonist and the age of the target audience. So like that's why Cinder is a young adult book, right? Because the target audience is 13 to 18 and the main character is 16. But with new adult, we're starting to explore, you know, a little bit more risque topics that we wouldn't normally allow in young adult books, but we're still exploring those ideas, which I really appreciate because to a certain extent, like I understand wanting to shelter your kids from some stuff, but I was a teenager. But
life is still out there.
Life is still out there. I was a teenager. We talked about sex and drugs and alcohol. I'm not saying you have to do those things in your book, but pull a Meg Cabot and talk about how hard peer pressure is to deal with. You know, don't ignore it altogether and pretend the teenagers don't face those kinds of issues because they do.
And so many things that we see in the young adult medium are dystopian.
Yeah.
Which I think is unique in its own way because it's showing this awareness of the outside world that we don't typically credit.
I think what's interesting about that is like early sci-fi stuff like Isaac Asimov, Orson Welles, that was very dystopic. That was that was extremely dystopic. And that was like some of the first stuff that we saw in terms of fiction as a dystopic type of way of storytelling. And that was all adult fiction. And so it's interesting to me how much that's adapted to the young adult community and hasn't really been in the sci-fi or fantasy community as much since.
Right.
Cool. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up new adult because, you know, our very first podcast was about House of Earth and Blood, which was, it was like, you know, it's by Sarah J. Maas, who does a lot of young adult stuff. But then when we picked it up, we were like, you know, this isn't, or, you know, that was considered like more of an adult book, but I think that's really a new adult.
Yes, I would agree because
of the audience and because of the age of the characters, you know, the protagonist specifically. And there was definitely a difference. And we kept, I think we mentioned a little bit how it's like, you know, it felt very much like a YA book, but there was more sex and cursing.
Yes.
So we're like, I guess it's an adult, but also it doesn't feel like really adult either.
Add more boobs. That's what it needs.
My Patreon team and I just discussed that. I haven't read the ACOTAR series yet.
I've started all of her series.
They were talking about the transition that ACOTAR is trying to make to new adult. And so we were talking about like, well, is there anything wrong with that? Is it isolating people who might want to read it and telling them that they're too young? And, you know, all those things. We talk about a lot of random stuff in my Patreon group. There's actually several of us that are librarians, so I think we get off topic sometimes.
Cool. You know, I think that another phenomenon that's unique to look at as ACOTAR is trying to transition into new adult, it's growing with its audience.
Yeah.
Which is something really cool and something that we don't always get to see. It's something that we see in Percy Jackson.
And Harry Potter.
Yes, we see those characters age with us. We build these deep connections. And ACOTAR is kind of trying to do that into the next stage of life without remaining as maybe middle grade friendly as Harry Potter or Percy Jackson did. So I think that's definitely a unique place for it to be existing.
Yeah, because I know that with Harry Potter, her writing gets more advanced as the books go on. The topics become a little bit more controversial and deeper and darker issues that you have to deal with the later that the books go on. But even those books only address, you know, some stuff that they address is very surface level.
Exactly.
That's true. I will say, you know, with this book, Cinder, and even in our first episode that we recorded, I just looking back, I was like, there are some really dark adult topics that are actually covered in here they're treated in a YA format, but there's some very intense stuff going on here.
That a cyborg begins as human with full rights. And then at what point do you become, you know, a subpar citizen?
Yeah, we talked about that a lot and what qualifies people to make that decision for you and how in the world did we, because I think it was M from M&K Talk YA, they did a bonus episode with me. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, you know, in our society, someone being able to have that kind of technology would almost make them better, not worse. You know, it would almost become a commodity of like, look at the new gadget I bought. So right. It's interesting that, like, in this society, it's sort of Piranized them.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that it's really cool just to see that question of, like, humanity is a thing a lot, I think, that comes up in sci-fi, too. Mm-hmm. So it was quite cool to see that brought into this fairy tale.
Who is exactly human,
too.
And who is not.
And what makes you... Right. What makes you human and what doesn't?
Yeah.
So I swear sometimes my dogs are human.
Yeah.
Yes.
The dogs. Thank goodness they're both chilling at the moment.
Bless them. The amount of
podcasts that we've had to pause. Like, I don't think we've gone a podcast without having to pause at least for a while for dogs.
I just started including it. Like, I just started being like, thank you for your opinion, Scamp. When I would put in, like, the show notes, like, special guest appearance by Scamp Finger. Like,
love it.
Because every once, I just try to go with it. You know, like, the other day we were covering a later book. We were covering book 3.5, and we were talking about a pretty dark moment. And Scamp, like, growled, and I was like, well, thank you for sharing your opinion on the matter. Like, I just kind of try to roll with it.
Our favorite thing is protest noted.
Yeah. I like that. Protest noted. That's great. I might steal that one in the future.
Please do.
Hilo has had such a fit today about food, like, all day. It's like, more food, more food, more food, more food. I want more food. And we're like, you eat enough. We know, like, we know what you're feeding you. Where you're feeding you.
Yeah, we have an Australian shepherd puppy on top of our palmipoo. So
we, my husband just bought a Jeep. And so he's been going for, like, fun cruises with the top down, and our oldest dog loves it. So the youngest he's got anxiety issues. So he's like, oh, this is weird. But our Scamp, like, absolutely loves it. So now, like, every time my husband gets his Jeep keys, he's like, where are we going? It's like, you're not always going. And he just gets this look on his face like, what do you mean I'm not going?
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of books, I've been reading a book about animal psychology.
Ooh.
And, like, this, and how they're studying specifically how animals process emotion. Mm-hmm. And, like, where do you define pain? And where do you define these things? And it's called Animal Wise. So it's written from the perspective of a science writer. So as she's interviewing these people who are working with these animals, and it's been life-changing to figure out that people who work with fish think that they can experience pain, and and the human qualities that these researchers struggle to keep out of their research because higher academia would consider it anthropomorphizing. So,
That's interesting.
Yes.
I know for sure my dogs feel pain.
And it's about that distinction too, like what we consider higher level emotions and what we consider lower level emotions and what we consider each creature capable of. So
yeah, because I'm a vegetarian, so I'm a little I don't want to say sensitive, but, like, I used to work in an animal shelter and I just learned too much had trouble separating the chickens that I took care of at the shelter from the chicken nuggets I ate at McDonald's, basically. But something that I know I've read up on is people say that that's why it's okay to boil lobsters alive, because they don't have the same vertebrae that we do, so they might not feel pain. And it's like, I don't know if
we don't know that.
I don't know if you get to make that call for them.
Yeah. And, like, the studies that they don't have fish without specifically, I was like, oh my gosh. So life changing.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway. Ginny, what's happened since the first part of Cinder?
I guess we could actually roll into the book now if we want to.
I'm sorry, I'm, like, tangenting your whole podcast.
No, we tangent all the
time. Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. So last time, well, basically we read parts 1 and 2. This book is conveniently split up into 4 parts, which made it real nice for us when we were reading. So we started this section, or we started our read again at part 3. Which, you know, if you're on an audiobook or if you're in a physical book, it's a little bit different, but...
With whatever page this is going to be.
Yeah, page numbers. But anyways,
this is not a spoiler-free podcast. So right. If you've not read up to this point and you are picky about spoilers, then now is your time to hit pause, turn around, pick up a book, maybe a nice glass of wine if you are of age to be enjoying such beverages, finish the book, and then we'll see you back. Or if you don't care about spoilers, or you've already read there, then play on.
Yeah, just keep hanging here with us. But last time we left off, we just learned, I believe, that Lunar, or blah, blah, blah. Her name is Cinder, but she's Lunar. There we go. I already messed up.
I messed Lunar up the lead.
That Lunar girl.
Lunar yeah. is Cinder.
She has a name and it happens to be Cinder, which is also the title of this book.
Very well said.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. So
Jenny versus English part.
probably every episode also I'm like, I mess up something. Anyways, that's where we left off. And we also left off where Queen Lavanna has arrived in the Commonwealth. And she just kind of invited herself and is now staying as a guest in the palace. So now we're going to pick up in part three, I guess. So Cinder finally fixes Prince Kai's Android. And so she discovers this direct communication chip, which basically works how it bypasses like the net when you communicate. It's a direct link to somebody. And so this android finally wakes up now that she's removed this chip and starts kind of spouting some info about the lost lunar princess Selene.
Which I feel like is I feel like there should be some sort of failsafe installed in these correct communication chips. Like yeah. you shouldn't just pick up in the middle of whatever you're saying, because that sounds like a direct threat to security of all kinds.
Well, the direct sounds communication like it, chip itself is a threat because it's not supposed to be there.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
So... I mean, there's a lot of issues. And also, these are supposed to, like, the palace people couldn't figure this out. Like, he had to go
yeah,
see out.
That like, also.
These guys, like, Cinder should have gotten a job offer. I'm sorry. You had to go to the town market because the palace mechanics couldn't figure it out. You should have given that girl a job offer. Like,
it's like
she
the
needs
IT
to
guy
be
who just
running
in
your IT
it
department.
Off
and on again. Like, right? Yes, it is.
Like, she needs to be running your IT department starting now.
Cinder did the equivalent of turning it off and back on again.
It's true.
Let's be real. Yeah.
But hey, remember, she's the best mechanic in the city, and she's 16. So there's
it's still
that
very impressive. I just can't believe she didn't walk away from that with a job interview. Like,
right.
For real. Well, she walked away with an invitation to the ball, like the 7th or something.
That's true.
So there's that.
So there's that. Love or money? The age-old
yeah.
question.
Take a shot every that's time enchanting true. Prince is enchanting.
That's true.
Take a shot every time the awkward girl is awkward.
Yeah.
We would all be dead.
We'll be dead by the end of this book. Okay, let's see. And so, yeah, lost Princess Selene. Ooh, who could that be? I don't know.
I have no idea.
No idea who that is.
Not a single clue.
So Cinder goes and returns the android to the palace, and then while she's there, she witnesses Lavanna like brainwashing this crowd of protesters into not protesting anymore. And it's kind of spooky.
It's not great.
No, it's not. And Lavanna, like, they have this moment where they lock eyes, and it's like, ooh, she knows that I know that she knows that I know that I know that she
they
knows
don't know
it.
That we know that they know that we know. They know.
Yeah, exactly. That's how
it's
it
like
feels.
My favorite Friends quote.
And Lavanna also brought Kai a gift, which is a single dose of the cure to the Leptomosis plague. Convenient.
Very convenient.
Right after his dad died.
Yeah, right
and
after
it just
his
so
dad
happens,
a lovely lady.
And it just so happens to be the exact dose needed for one average male.
It is. Wow.
What a lovely
sus.
Lady.
Sus.
So sus. She's the most sus person all the time. Constantly. Anyways, there's that, and then Kai is just like, wow, this is, yeah, he's also kind of mad, but he sends it off to the lab to go hopefully get replicated, and he calls for Cinder just so he can thank her personally, because Enchanting Prince wants to be enchanting.
And invite her.
And invite her to the ball
again. Despite her wishes that she does not want to be invited to the ball.
Yeah, so
Enchanting Prince.
They end up having this moment in an elevator, because, you know.
They were going to get smoochy.
But then... He ruins the moment by like hitting the pressure point on the back of her neck, and then she like passes out. So,
what not
that.
To do with your new girlfriend?
Exactly. Right?
What not to do with your lunar cyborg girlfriend? Step one.
Don't hit her pressure point, or else she will
Step
just pass
two,
out.
Step two: get rid of all pass mirrors. Out. They don't like those.
That's true.
Yeah. Step three: stop asking her to this damn ball already. Get a blue.
Okay.
Yep.
Step four: if she doesn't call you back, it does not mean show up at her work. It means block away.
Oh man,
my husband thought that part was absolutely hilarious. He was like, you know, if he wasn't the cool prince, that would just be stalker. Like, he has been blowing up this girl's phone, and she is ignoring him, and he shows up at her work. Like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, so, and for somebody who is so, like, I know that I'm the prince, but it's not that big of a deal that I'm the prince. He plays the prince card so much.
He's like, humble it's cool that I'm the prince. Yeah. Watch me
we'll
be humble.
We'll have to talk about Prince Kai more later. he's a character.
That he is.
Oh, yeah, he
so,
is.
So, yes, I'm going to make a note of what I want to say about that. As okay, not to derail Ginny more, because I'm good at that.
That's true.
And I will happily derail Ginny for
I've proven to be good at that as well, so.
It's my favorite pastime.
All right, so we learned that Dr. Erland, I'm not sure how you say it, but I say Erland, so he's lunar also. And he had a shell doll that was killed by Lavanna, and that's why he wants to, like, overthrow her and stuff, because he doesn't agree with what she's doing. And while, you know, Cinder got she passed out, obviously, and so he's kind of working to see what happened. And so we learn that her lunar gift has been blocked by this, like, chip that's in her spine, which is, like, you know, what keeps happening when she gets hit at that spot.
And so has she's the actually, big feels.
Yeah, so she's not actually a shell. Her lunar gift has just been blocked and hidden away. Yeah. And
until
so
the right plot point.
Exactly. Until the right plot point. But the doctor ends up giving her a portion of this single antidote thing or whatever. So it should be enough to save her sister. So Cinder ends up going over to the quarantine zone. But she's too late.
Still dying.
But she's too late. Yep. So like right before she's about to give her the antidote, Peony is already dead. And it is a sad time. But as she is like getting chased around and stuff, she ends up giving that portion of the antidote to Chang Sunto, who is the kid from like chapter 1 or 2 in the beginning in the market, where we first see that instance of Ludmosis. And spoiler alert, the cure works. But then she's forcibly taken home, where she and Audrey get into it over Peony's death. And Audrey tells her to remove her foot as a punishment. And then when she goes to her room, she finds that Iko
is
dismantled.
Which is actually a foot and not the whole ass leg at this point.
Oh, have you decided that it is now?
I think it said there was something definitely in there. I think it said that it attached at the ankle. I was like, okay, so it is just
there
a foot,
you go.
Not the entire
but
leg.
But it is the, so there's actually two pieces.
Okay.
So her calf is part.
Yes.
And then she also has a foot. The foot is separate and it's connected at the ankle so she can, you know, have a foot that actually is usable. So she loses her foot, but she still has her calf and her calf compartment.
Gotcha. Thank you for clarifying. We said that we had to ask Bethany about that after
our last episode. Yes, I was like, Bethany probably knows the answer to this.
Bethany was just like, is it her foot? Closely. Is it her? Yeah. Yeah. Allie was like, are you sure it's just her foot? Are you sure? And I was just like, well, there's a joint. And Allie was like, no, but listen. And I was like, okay.
Because
talking about how
foot,
much
big of
he just
deal.
Like swings over his, yeah. Yeah.
No, it's two different components that are connected.
There we go. Mystery solved. We did it.
Thank you. I can sleep now.
Okay. Oh, well, good. Now you can dream.
Let's see. So this kind of takes us into part 4, where Prince Kai visits the market again, because what do you do when your lunar cyborg girlfriend doesn't?
When your crush won't answer your phone calls, you show up at her work and demand that she goes on a break.
Yeah. And Cinder is basically grounded right now. She can only go to work and work on the stuff that Audrey wants her to do. And
Kai is basically Princess Jasmine. In my brain at this point.
Yeah. That's somewhere, I guess. So Kai gives her this nice pair of silk gloves, too.
Yes, exactly.
He does. Just like, yeah, here's this fancy gift. And then her stepsister Pearl is like, and just like throws him in the dirt and has a tantrum and stuff.
But luckily, Kai does snap back at her, which is nice.
He does. You're right.
Yes,
you're right.
He does.
Yeah. And then we kind of time skip a little, at least in my mind, kind of time skip a little bit to Kai being crowned the emperor. And the Sepp family is preparing for the ball, as the Sepp family does, while Cinder is preparing her escape. Because she's going to try to escape on the night of the ball with that car that she fixed up. But
gasoline
then she gets,
car.
Yeah.
The pumpkin.
But she gets the little, the pumpkin.
Pumpkin.
It is the pumpkin.
It's
the
bright
escape.
Orange and it's in the shape of a dome.
I totally missed that part, but that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. It is the pumpkin, the escape pod here. But then she gets kind of interrupted by the decom chip kind of going off and be like, boop, doop, doop, someone wants to send you a message. Boop, doop, doop. or whatever.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like, yes.
I'm just going to sample that, and that's going to be my new notification chime on my phone.
Actually, if I could record that and change all of my text message tones to that, I would.
Amazing.
I like it.
I'll post the web file in shortened version. Boop-a-doop-a-doop. Someone wants to talk to you.
So someone wants to talk to her. Then she's like, oh, what's this? Accept the call. And then it's this random girl who happens to be about her age with a lot of hair all around her.
I do like that she won't answer the phone for the prince, but like random numbers she doesn't recognize.
Like, what's this, a spam call? Hi.
Spam call that she doesn't recognize. She's like, hello.
The emperor is calling you. No. Future emperor, no. Decline. Decline. Unknown number.
Spam call from Washington, D.C.
From the moon.
Oh, yeah, from the moon, even better.
Yeah. So, hello.
Yeah, it's this random person who turns out to be a spy who had put the chip in Nancy the android. And so this spy kind of had like a change of heart or something. And then so she's apparently like the ward of Sybil, who is Lavanna's head thaumaturge, who's with her now on Earth.
She's
and
a bitch.
So
zero
she...
out of 10. Don't recommend on Yelp.
Yep.
Which one? Sybil? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Lavanna too, I guess. So I was like, well, I don't know what you're referring
also
to.
Let's just throw everybody into the into the basket of sus.
I think I think we decided that this girl was a cyber espionage expert.
Oh, okay.
That's a real fancy title.
But,
I know,
yeah,
right?
That's a really fancy title for someone who is about Cinder's age too.
Right.
And she's like, yeah.
She's well, Cinder's like the best mechanic in the entire
she
city.
She is the best
so.
Mechanic in the entire city of New Beijing.
So
perhaps the entire Commonwealth.
Be,
I don't know.
Right. Nobody's doing a story about Jane Doe that works at McDonald's. So it's got to be the best of the best that have these main character roles.
Mm-hmm. I mean, according to this YA medium, like 16-year-olds rule the world, man.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
We like, need them to solve all our problems.
So far behind every 16-year-old I've ever read about. Like, I'm in my 30s and I have accomplished nothing in comparison.
I feel that on a spiritual level. Yeah. Like, hi, I would like to get my laundry done. And then I do, and then like for a week,
oh
I'm
gosh,
like, I would
right?
like to get my laundry done. I'm like, oh.
We often say later. That we live in a limbo. Like, you have to check the basket because it might be clean and it just hasn't been folded and put away. And it might be dirty and it just hasn't been washed. So you gotta.
Nobody ever knows.
It's a surprise.
No.
Schrodinger's laundry basket. It is both
yes.
until it was investigated.
I like that. Yes, that's my life.
Okay, where do we leave off? The spy? Yeah, the
we
spy was just
off
like...
with Bethany is the worst guest ever.
No, never. We did not leave off there. We never left off there.
I think we would be more on track
constant
than with just me giving you shit.
Constant commentary on this summary.
Let me see. Oh, yeah, so the spy basically just like, oh, yeah. She's like, oh, so Lavanna knows everything, by the way. She's like, and she's going to kill Kai because she knows everything and she doesn't need him as soon as she becomes the Empress. And then Cinder's like, what? I better tell him. So Cinder has to go get ready for the ball. And so she does. And she arrives a hot mess. But she gets her dance. Much to her family's dismay. But despite all this flirting and feeling
yeah,
stuff going on.
Her. Like, she tries to slap her in front of everyone.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Kai is like, no,
oh,
thank you.
Yeah, no, no.
Kai,
no,
like,
no.
grabs her hand and is like, not my girlfriend.
That's true. Did you go to the market to see her? Did you call her 27 times? I don't think
How'd
so.
How'd you get her to answer your phone calls? That's my
Yeah, but aside all of their like flirting and feelings is going on, she finally delivers this news. But it doesn't matter in the end because Kai's like, well, I'm going to marry her anyways because what choice do I have?
Need that antidote.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. And so
save my people.
Cinder's like, I have this brilliant plan. I'm going to try to stop him by saying that he's in love with me. But Lavanna's just like, ha, love. I don't care. Yeah. And so
Lavanna
she
is like, this marriage is simply for power. Why would I care
oh, yeah.
if he's in
oh,
love?
Yeah.
No,
exactly.
None of us are pretending we love each other, you sad, pathetic little girl.
That's basically
Listen,
what
I
she
want
says.
An heir, I want power. That's all I want. You can have the rest.
She's like, this is how politics works. Glad you had your little fun. I do like that she's also drinking wine while she's talking to them about being children. Like, I think it's part of her being like, see, I'm old enough to drink too. Like, you guys can't even buy alcohol. Maybe don't talk to me about politics.
Okay, but what is the drinking age in New Beijing? We haven't been given a drinking age in New Beijing.
That's fair.
That's true.
All we know.
I'm making assumptions based off of current culture, so that's fair. Actually, that's I don't know the drinking age in current Beijing. I'm basing it off of American culture, I should say.
18.
Yeah. Okay. Is it? Okay.
So, I guess Kai could be drinking.
Kai's also the emperor, so I feel like he could probably get away drinking. Yeah, I feel like
he can do anyways. I can do whatever he wants.
Clearly.
He just can't call up Cinder.
Right. Well, he can. She just won't answer.
She just doesn't answer.
Yeah. So Levana is over there sitting by, like, I definitely imagine her just, like, leaning on the pillow, like, swirling her wine, like, ha 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 ha.
Very Cersei Lannister.
Yeah. And so she, like, intervenes and is just like, well, I'm just going to, like, step on you now. And she reveals that Cinder is, like, a lunar and stuff, and she tries to arrest her. And, like, Cinder's like, I better get out of here. And, like, makes this dramatic escape, and she runs, and she loses her foot, and she eventually gets caught. Yeah. So and then
Kai
she gets imprisoned.
The most heartbreaking sentence of our entire lives.
Oh.
You're even more painful to look at than she is. Ugh.
Oh, yeah, that
that is like
a
dagger to the soul right there. Oh. That's something that'll keep you awake at night.
Yeah, it will.
If it wasn't answering your phone calls at first, I'm definitely not going into them now.
Definitely not answering them now. No. Maybe that's why she wasn't answering your calls, Kai.
Ouch.
Ouch.
Yeah, that was a really painful
I took it hard.
Line.
I'm sorry.
No. Like, there were some, like, there were a lot of moments in there that were really
There's
painful.
There's a lot going on
sure.
this last
in
There's
this,
so
yeah, in this
much
last,
happening.
Like, at the ball especially, so much happens, so we're going to have to break that down a little bit more in like, 2 minutes, but I'm almost done with the summary. So,
we can do this.
Okay, we're almost done. We're almost done. So she gets imprisoned because she gets caught. And so, yeah, she does get imprisoned. And then the doctor visits her. He's just like, by the way, you're Princess
if
Celine.
If someone wanted to escape, wink, wink,
and, yeah.
then maybe, wink, wink.
Yeah, maybe it should be you, and maybe you should come and visit me in Africa.
Wink, wink.
And then we just, at the very end, she, like, breaks out, and that's where we end the book. She is now on the loose.
She's
cyborg lunar princess. A
lunar
ghost.
Princess on the loose.
Yeah, because she cuts out her ID chip, and now she's a ghost. On the run, but going to Africa.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. So with that, I guess let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
And we're back.
Hi, I'm Bethany Finger, the host of Prince Kai Fan Pod, a Marissa Meyer Book Club podcast. Join me every week during my read-along journey through all of the books by author Marissa Meyer, one chapter at a time, spoiler-free. Each episode will feature a different guest, new fan art, and laughter and joy through reading. You can find Prince Kai Fan Pod on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all other listening platforms. And now, back to the show.
Thank you. Hello again.
Hello.
Hello again.
Wow. So lots of stuff, lots of tangents, but let's do some more tangents.
So I do want to mention, I mentioned briefly about Kai. I don't know. Bethany, are you familiar with, this might be a silly question, but Cassandra Clare novels, The Mortal Instruments and the like?
I have not read them. I have been meaning to, but I've been working on my degree the last few years. I did my bachelor's degree in 5 semesters, and that took up a lot of time. And now I'm trying to do my master's degree in 5 semesters, and it's also taking up time. So I went to start reading them, and then I saw how many books were in the series.
So many.
And I got very intimidated about making that kind of a commitment. So I was like, this is going to be an after graduation thing.
That's fair.
That's totally valid.
When I was in college, I did basically no pleasure reading, except on the breaks. But then when I started school again, I totally forgot again. So I have quit a lot of series partway through on accident because of that. Yeah,
I kind of forced the time to read because it's like, it's my things. I need it.
Right.
So like I especially like audiobooks, or I'll read while I'm on my, I have a little stationary bike in the living room. So it's like, well, I have to exercise, right? So it's like an excuse to read for 45 minutes while I'm on the stupid bike. I mean, the bike, yay.
Right after I graduated, I started reading again. I was like, this is the best thing ever.
I was like, I missed this so much. This is part of why I've been so depressed in college.
Right.
There's a lot of books, but go ahead, Allie, with what you were saying about the moral instruments, I guess.
So Kai gives me what I like to call the Herondale reflex. There's this family that you'll learn about in the Mortal Instruments, namely the Herondales. And all of the boys are little shits, but you can't help but love them. But you also really want to smack him. And I feel that way about Kai.
Yeah.
Every time words come out of his mouth, I'm just like, why are you such a shit? But also, why do I still like you?
What's interesting too, and I don't agree with it. I'm getting glared at right now because he knows what I'm about to say. I love Kai, obviously, right? Like, I named my podcast after him. But I think he's great, and I think he's doing the best he can possibly do as a baby who just became the emperor of the most powerful country on the planet. My husband thinks he's a terrible ruler.
Oh, no.
He's like, nope, you never give in to negotiations that quickly. He's like, she said I won't give the antidote unless you marry me. And he's like, gross. All right, I'll marry you. Like, no, find another way. I was like, okay, well, when you're an 18-year-old emperor, you can be judgy.
There you go. Yeah, I feel like similarly about the whole Herondale thing. I'm just like, I really love Kai, but he definitely has moments where I'm just like, you.
But I'm the prince, and I'm just gonna show up.
I feel the same about Cinder.
I'm gonna.
I feel the same about Cinder. I'm like, I love this girl, but damn. Like, Dr. Erland was like, I don't want you coming anywhere near the palace, and she was like, yeah, but I'm gonna show up anyways with this android who could have easily gotten here by itself. I don't want you going anywhere near the palace. I mean it. And she's like, okay, now I'm going to go to the ball, though, and strike up a conversation with the queen. Bring all the attention to myself. You're supposed to remain incognito. And she's like, how can I cause a scene and get as much attention as possible?
It's true.
I'm going to show up in this ratty-ass dress. Covered in.
Oh, yeah.
Called late.
Greasy gloves.
I'm going to be announced because I'm the personal guest of the emperor.
Which, to be fair, she totally didn't think about that.
Stepmommy comes down there and makes it even more a scene.
Oh yeah. The ball scene is just like, it's funny because I heard that you talked about this in your podcast, Bethany, where it's like a lot of people, like in Cinderella stories, most of the time everyone's head turns like, oh, they notice her because she's beautiful, and this time everyone's like, oh. Who is that?
Everyone's like, what's that girl wearing? We talked about that a lot because it's such a transition. It's like she still gets announced, she still shows up late, and she still gets heads turned as soon as she walks in the door. But it's not because she's the most beautiful woman they've ever seen. It's because she's
soaking wet.
No, she's dressed very inappropriately for this ball.
Yep. I love it though.
It's but nice also, to have differences. You know, we've absorbed and consumed the Cinderella story from countless angles. So it's nice to have a couple things in there that make it different. Like, and I think Cyborgs that's what's so great about this series is that it's like, how many Cinderella stories have you read? A million. So what's so great about this one? She's a cyborg. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
There's these creepy people that live on the moon and they have evil magic powers. Okay. There's a plague. there's a plague and they go into outer space. All right. Now it's not just your regular average Cinderella story. Like there's a little bit more nuance going on.
Exactly. And that's definitely what I love about this. Cause like, yeah, I do like retellings. I like elements that, you know, we're familiar with and like fantasy and fairy tales for sure. So it's just always been something I've liked, but this definitely felt new and fresh to me.
Mm-hmm. Same. I'm big on fairy tale adaptations. And one thing I love is when a fairy tale adaptation can still like plot twist me.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that even though she, you know, Cinder is obviously Cinderella, she's also kind of Snow White, right? Like based on the whole,
the evil queen angle.
The evil queen thing. That. Yeah.
Evil queen trying to kill her.
Yeah.
Because she is more beautiful and has the power to overthrow.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah.
Yeah. I see that. Yeah, I could see that.
Anyway, and yeah, that's related. How I took it. I was just like, right.
And
right.
She does have a comatose. She's not awakened by a prince, but like.
Yeah, but her powers were sealed away for like the longest time.
Right. And, yeah. So, yeah. I can see elements there. She didn't get her dwarves, though. She just got Iko. But Iko is a pretty good dwarf. I love Iko.
Yeah, I think so.
Poor one out for Iko.
Mm-hmm. Love Iko.
That was such a sad moment, too, where she comes home and...
And it's all just in pieces on her floor. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. But she saved her personality chip, so we're going to see that somewhere else. Yeah. For sure.
But prior to the ball, there's also this exchange where we really get to see Lavanna's true colors. Mm-hmm. There's that exchange with the mirror.
Oh, yeah. At the dinner. Yeah.
That's so that disturbing, really intense, right? And plot twist, right? Like, you expect her to be the evil queen. We know that they have evil magic powers, but I think this is the first time we realize the depth of those evil magic powers.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time we see how severe it is. It's not just making Kai think she's the most beautiful woman in the world, right? It's not just making him not talk when she's talking and that kind of thing. It's she can force you to gouge your own eye out.
Yeah.
Simply to prove a point.
Exactly. And the fact that it was planted and it wasn't even the... So for those of you who are just listening and haven't read the book or just listening to hear us rant, why? But hi. so there's this... they're at dinner with Kai and Lavanna. It's this very diplomatic thing. And when they're served in the way that you would imagine, like a fancy meal with the cloches over the plates.
Side note, what just happened? I've never heard that word before. You are a genius. What is it?
Cloche?
Cloche? Is that the little...
Cloche.
That's the thing that goes over the plate.
Yes, it is.
Thank you. I feel cloche. So smart. I never knew that before. And now you're like educating me. I love it.
I am full of useless knowledge.
I'm putting it in my notebook right now.
Like, more where that comes
cloches.
From.
Cloches. Okay.
Cloche.
Okay.
So when they lift them up, there's food for like the majority. But then there's a mirror. On Lavanna's plate. And the Lunar very much despise mirrors simply because they can't trick a mirror. A lot of their magic sort of works on perception instead of physical appearance. So when they look in the mirror, they very much see their true self. So she gets angry. And she gets livid. And immediately turns to take it out on the servant. And is able to manipulate him so that he begins to like gouge his own eye out. And of course, everyone... is horrified, as they should be. And Kai is sort of speaking up for this person, like, it can't possibly be him. And the servant's like, it's not me. I didn't do it. I was just serving. And then I'm pretty sure that we find out that didn't Sybil plant it?
Yeah, they planted it to prove a point. They were trying to see what Kai's reaction would be in that type of situation. They were gauging him as a ruler and a leader.
Yeah, because...
Right. Lavanna, so they were literally going to gouge a woman's eye out just to prove a point.
Yeah. It was...
And it's...
Ugh.
It's the first time we see her as the true evil being that she's been painted to be.
Because so far she's been, like, just evil, right? But now we're seeing, like, she's actually savage and barbaric to a certain extent.
Exactly.
Right. Most of our, like, impressions of her have just been through, like, rumors or just, like, oh, we've heard that she does this on Luna and we know that, you know, she doesn't like this and she doesn't do, or, you know, all these things. But to see it, like, firsthand be so... like
it's visceral.
Yeah
I would say it's the difference between the movie Mean Girls and the movie Jawbreaker. Like Mean Girls, they have the burn book, but Jawbreaker, they committed murder. So like you have two sets of evil. Like obviously they're both bad, but one just tips the scales quite a bit.
Regina George is a bad person, but at least she didn't kill anybody. Like
exactly.
And she's been very Regina George up to this point. And then
yeah, that's true.
It's like, this is Regina George. Got it. Okay. And then it's like, oh, I didn't realize I was watching a remake of The Heather. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Pretty much.
No one told me there was going to be like a killing spree going on. Got it.
JDY.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that one up because that was a really intense.
That's a pivotal moment. On top of a lot of pivotal moments, then.
So many pivotal moments.
The thing about, you know, when I was writing this plot summary, I was like, there's a lot that just happens, you know? So I'm like, I don't want to skip anything, but I also don't want to, but it's just, there's so much, you know?
There is a lot.
And it happens, like, quickly. This book moves pretty quickly.
It does. It's only, like, 350 pages.
Yeah.
A little less, depending on the format.
Yeah, which, I mean, I like the fact that it's fast-paced because it helps you just, you know, keep going and keep going. It doesn't have so much like dead time or anything, which is nice.
It also doesn't feel like there's a lot of information dumps throughout.
Yeah. Right.
Which I think is what sometimes causes dead space in a book.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I think that as a writer, there's sometimes this overwhelming urge to make sure that everything's being interpreted exactly as you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that gets thrown into world building, but in an almost clumsy way. Or it's like, I'm going to spend this brick of text telling you about my world so that way you understand how this world works instead of trusting the reader to be able to infer these things.
I think that's the importance of having like a critique partner too. Like my critique partner is author Abigail Spigari, who wrote the Daughter of the Moon series. And that's the importance of having another writer look at your work and be able to tell you like, hey, I get that you're trying to give me every tiny little detail, but also, you know, I don't need that, right? Like, that's not the importance of the story. Exactly. And I think it's important to have like critique partners that can point those things out to you so that you're like, oh, I have all this information in my head. And it's like, it's great that you have that. And it helps you in terms of like writing the story, but you don't necessarily need to include everything that you came up with for the book in the book.
That's exactly true.
Save it for the interviews.
Save it for the interviews, exactly. Save it for when you come on podcasts and stuff.
Exactly.
Like, if you've already written Lord of the Rings, just save the rest for the Silmarillion.
You know, well, and some books do go into a very dark amount of in-depth detail. I personally did not much care for the Lord of the Rings books. I think I'm too stupid for them. I try to read them, and there's too much going on for me.
Like they're large.
There's way too much going on to me. It's way, 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 way more than I'm capable of keeping track of, and more than I don't want to have to take notes so that I can keep track of characters and development and plot and how worlds work and languages. And it's just too much work for me. But obviously there are people who enjoy that aspect of reading and, you know, consuming stories. So it just depends on like you as the writer, like what story you're trying to tell. And then you as a reader, what story you enjoy absorbing.
Yeah. And I think I haven't read a lot of sci-fi, but I think that there is a difference when it comes to genre with that because sci-fi is very world-building focused and you have to like explain more stuff as far as the mechanics of the world where this is, you know, this is a young adult book where, you know, young adult readers probably don't want to spend that much time. You know, a lot of YA books are very character focused because we want to see how they develop and we want to see, the characters.
That's what's intriguing to younger readers in general.
Yeah.
Is it going to be the personal stories? They don't care so much as on the workings of the world.
Yeah.
Especially exactly. Like in terms of like politics and
exactly. Because that's boring.
Like relationship dynamics and stuff. And what I think is great was her choice to have Cinder have this interface in her brain so that when she has to look something up, the reader also gets that information.
Right.
And it's smart. Not, you know, there's a lot of books where like, but for example, right now I'm reading the Vampire Academy series. And this is not a knock at that author, by the way. I'm actually really enjoying the series. But there is a lot of explanation going on. And sometimes it can feel like an information dump. Like they'll be talking about one thing and they'll stop talking about that one thing, give me four paragraphs to explain it, and then go back into what's happening. And that can pull you away from the story a lot. And exactly. I feel like this is a great way to do it because the reader and the main character are also getting that information at the same time. So it doesn't pull you out of the story at all.
Right. It's definitely a good, like, it's something you have to work on, you know, technique-wise, which I think is really done well in this book. Just like the amount of, like, we understand that, yeah, this is a different setting, but we have enough parallels to our world now, so it doesn't take that long to understand.
So it's very clever to go with the new Beijing. Format
or even when she talked about
we already understand how these things works.
We talked about too on my podcast, did New Beijing mean that it was Beijing, a new version of Beijing in the same place that the current Beijing is, or that it was like a colony somewhere?
It's a good question. I just inferred
that it was
1,000% was like, oh, it's just Beijing.
Yeah, but I definitely
my co-host on that episode was like, do you think it's like a colony situation where it's like New York, New Hampshire, New Jersey, but those things were also in UK before they came over? And we were like, well, this is our version. And it's like, I just thought it meant Beijing, but in a new spot.
Yeah, like, that's interesting.
You know, almost like new New York in Futurama. Like it's the same thing, but it's the new version because the first one got destroyed somehow.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, definitely the naming, thought that was
the nomenclature definitely led me to think of it as just Beijing. But again,
yeah, me too.
Beijing 2.0,
yeah. Right?
Because they also mention other places in the world. They have the summit of the world leaders too, and then we've had a couple mentions of like France, I think, has been mentioned, and like Africa has been mentioned, obviously. So and those aren't, and we don't hear like New Africa or like Africa is a continent, which we didn't get like New China. So. But I definitely, I just picture that they're all in the same places.
Location.
Maybe territory lines have like blurred a little bit, perhaps. But in general, I definitely saw things as kind of similar.
And it's also kind of vague, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Marissa has said herself that it's hundreds of years in the future. Okay. Like when I tried to get an exact number out of her, she was like, hundreds, Bethany. It's just hundreds of years in the future. Like, that leaves a lot of room for what could and could not change over that time. Because how many hundreds of years would it take for us to develop a world and culture that had no religion whatsoever? Because that's what this series is. I think that's something that's going to take a good 400 to 600 years, if not more, right?
But also it's clever because if you just assign it hundreds of years, then it has staying power.
Yeah.
Because, like, we have this thing where Back to the Future.
Yeah, yes.
They gave us like a date. 2012.
Yes.
Well, it's the or same 2020.
As, like, have you ever watched a movie and it's like 1995 and then it'll be like present day and then it's like, great, now I have to go look up when this movie came out. Thanks.
Right.
So that's a very good point. It leaves it to the imagination. Someone in 100 years could pick up this book and it would be hundreds of years in the future from when they're reading it. So very good
point. There's no real,
makes there's it no real timeless,
standard to hold it to. Yeah, exactly.
Which is what fairy tales are, timeless.
That's true. See what so I speaking of fairy tales, I think we do have all of our important Cinderella elements in this story, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have Cinderella, obviously.
Did you guys figure out the fairy godmother? Because I was listening to 10 different podcasts about, and a lot of people did not figure out the fairy godmother element. So I'm always curious.
I didn't think about it till I heard about what you said in your podcast. So Ellie can answer that.
Okay.
Cool. So yeah, in basically every Cinderella retelling, there's some sort of like fairy godmother,
right?
Whether that's a person or like some mechanic that is like switches the thing from.
Yeah. And in this book, like, we get three contributing factors to create the one element together, which I think is really great.
I don't think I have it off the top of my head, so please enlighten me.
So there are three fairy godmothers in this. Peony provides
the dress.
Mm-hmm. Aiko helps provide the dress and the foot, because right. she saved the dress and the foot for her. And Dr. Erland helps her get the car by paying her the money that she uses to purchase the parts to fix the car. So all three of those elements combined create the way that Cinderella got her dress, got her shoes, and got to the ball.
Yeah, and I remember, so you were talking to, or somebody, I'm not sure if it was you or your co-host, was talking about how, like, Dr. Erland kind of gave her the knowledge of, you know, who she really is. That kind of was transformative in a way, too.
Yes, I think I actually talked about that. Yeah. Which, again, is a contributing factor. I definitely didn't think about him,
yeah, as a, like, fairy godmother character, but I was like, you know what, now that it was mentioned, that I totally understand where that comes from, yeah.
And that just happens when you read each individual word like 9,000 times and take notes and then discuss it endlessly.
That's fair.
You know, like I said, I pick up on details even Marissa missed sometimes. So that just shows you that we pay way too close attention on my podcast.
No, we do. And like, honestly, that's part of being someone who's enthusiastic and being a reader mm-hmm. who wants to revisit these stories. And that's really the hallmark of a great author, too, is creating this story that people want to dive into in this world that you just want to climb into and continue to explore more of. So, yeah, kudos to Marissa on that for creating a series that you want to spend 70 plus years discussing. For sure. And
that's the mark of a really good cool. series. There are plenty of series that are enjoyable, right?
Right.
And there's plenty of books that I've enjoyed, but I might never read them again. What makes a book readable a second time or a third time or a fourth time is that you're always picking up new elements, new what we call Easter eggs, new moments of foreshadowing, perhaps relationship exactly. dynamics that you didn't take into consideration the first couple of times around. Or, you know, like I mentioned before, reading Harry Potter as a child versus reading Harry Potter as an adult and being like, mm-hmm. oh, that was super obvious. But when I was 13, I thought I was a fucking genius for figuring out right. the plot to it. You know, I think that's what's great about these types of books. And, you know, like we talked about before with Harry Potter and Percy Jackson, is that despite the fact that we're getting older, we still like revisiting stories we're already familiar with. You can't do that with a boring story. It only works with a story exactly. that still captures your attention, no matter how many times you enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Like, I can't count the amount of times that I've reread, like, Clockwork Prince, for example, from the Infernal Devices series.
I have no idea how many times I've read this series or Harry Potter. I could honestly not tell you. I couldn't even guess at this point.
I have page numbers memorized for my copy.
So I always have different guests for each episode, and Amanda from Fictional Hangover Podcast and I were talking once, and she was like, I think that was in book two. And I told her, I said, I feel like it was halfway through, bottom of the page on the right-hand side. And she was like, well, you have to check now.
Yeah.
And I even posted a picture on Instagram because it was halfway through, bottom of the page on the right-hand side, like the last paragraph. It's just because you become so familiar with the story that you sort of start to remember moments that captured your attention, especially if they do it multiple times. Mm-hmm. Or like Marissa said, I pay too close attention, whichever you want to believe.
All of the above.
Way. Yeah.
That's fine.
Speaking of like paying attention, and so Bethany, you mentioned like Easter eggs a little bit. So this is
yes.
Allie's first read through. Did you catch anything that you think is like an Easter egg that, Allie, that like you were like, or maybe you're just like, is that going to come up sometime that we don't know about? Like both of us obviously have read like, or actually I haven't read Winter, so I haven't read the entire series, but
right.
that was one of those where I got stopped in like college and then yeah.
Life happens.
Life happens. I will say the audiobooks are phenomenal. So if you like audiobooks and you know are short on time, I would recommend checking those out.
Well, hopefully now that we started Cinder, I'm going to keep this momentum and I'm going to be excited to actually
reread the rest of the series but there are quite a few. So I'm looking at my list. I pulled up my list.
Like,
and
I was reading this the second time. I was like, man, there's so many Easter eggs in this book.
see. It looks like there's 137.
Wow.
So there's quite a few. A lot of them don't show up in this book, though. You know, there's four mm-hmm. books and then a novella and then two graphic novels and then an anthology. So there's some stuff that doesn't show up for a while, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think of some stuff that showed up in this book. Oh, a cute one is in the very first chapter, Aiko makes a side comment that Cinder is going to need new gloves for the ball. And Kai gives her new gloves to wear to the ball. That's a cute one. I'm reading through them, trying to make sure none of them are giveaways for later.
I was going to say, like, I'm not going to, like, go into it too much, but we did say this was, not a spoiler-free podcast, but, like, there's definitely a mention of each of the major characters, or, like,
yes.
an allusion to each of the major characters in,
yes,
in
which
the rest
is great.
Of the series,
I think
is
that's
cool.
A wonderful way to very slightly hint at...
Mm-hmm.
Hint, blonde-haired, hint.
Hint, hint, blonde-haired, but there's two, yeah. there's two other elements that I think yeah. are very vague, and a third element that... I didn't even catch until like my fourth time reading the books.
Okay.
So there are lots of moments. I did ruin it and I'm sorry for that. But like I said, young adult books are predictable, right?
They are. Yeah.
She gave us two paragraphs describing that character. Did you really think she wasn't coming back? She's not going to give us that much information for no reason.
It's true. And we straight up got Winter's like name because they talk about, oh, what about Princess Winter, like, at some point?
Yeah.
About, like, her being a marriage candidate possibility instead
of
Ravonna.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
So I did
and I knew
find...
that Winter was one of the books, so I was like, oh.
I did find one of them, right? Pearl wants to volunteer Cinder for the plague research.
And then she did give up.
And then she did. Doctor,
she did not volunteer.
In the beginning, we talk about, like, I wonder why they started the draft. And Dr. Erland reveals that he started the draft to find Cinder / Selene.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's discuss that element for a minute. So if he started the draft, then how did that draft contribute to the idea that cyborgs are subhuman? What was the ultimate
That is explained later in a very in-depth way. So I don't know how much of it to discuss without giving spoilers for you who haven't read it. That's explained very, very detailed in the second and third book, in the third book especially.
Okay. I didn't remember, so I'm excited then, since I'm going to keep reading it, but...
I found out one thing.
I'm sorry.
No. No, it's good. I get excited about these things. I'm like, aha.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is me trying to convince you to read the rest of the series, right? If you read the rest of
the
series,
me now.
You can
the
come
second
on
book
my
is
podcast
not...
and you can do chapter
discussion. Did you
discussion.
Take the second book already?
I did take the second book.
Just kidding. Jenny stole the second book, so I will... I mean, it's her book, but whatever.
Well, yeah. 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 Let me see. What else did I want to ask about? Oh, of course, I was like, we got to talk about Cinder and Kai as like a ship.
Yeah.
Do we ship it? Do we not ship it? What's the vibe?
I ship it.
I ship it, but Cinder needs to answer his damn phone calls. She'd be rude.
So like a little bit rude, but it's funny.
What's
now
rude
I can't
is calling
get...
somebody back. So many times.
Yeah.
Not taking a hint. What were you saying, Jenny?
That was basically what I was going to say, was that now that Bethany talked about how it's like kind of stalkerish to just call somebody that many times and then visit them at their work and stuff when they don't answer your... Now I can't get it out of my head. I'm like, oh no. Kai, why? Please. Sir, please.
Yeah, and that was something my husband pointed out, that he was like, he's listened to the audiobook with me and we were like in the car driving and he like paused it and was like, you know, if she didn't like him and he wasn't the hot prince and he was just like the creepy guy down the street, this would be some pretty serious stalker shit.
It's like Beauty and the Beast and like Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah. It's like, it's only cool and cute because it's the prince. But like, let's say this is some creepy guy that like always hits on her when she goes to Walmart and like can't take no for an answer. And then she like changes her phone number and moves out of the city. And then like he still shows up at her work. Like, I couldn't find you. You didn't answer my call. So I had to find you. It's like, okay, do we call 911? Do we like change our hair color and our name and move to a new town? Like, what do we do here?
My name is now Ella.
My name is now Ella.
As opposed to Cinder, I'm now Ella.
I listened to your podcast and I said that, or I saw that you counted like how many times he asked her the ball. It was like 7 or something. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Poor guy.
This guy. He says, hi. Now you want to go to the ball? Now do you want to go to the ball?
Now do you want to go? No? Okay.
No.
Why don't you just ask literally anybody else?
Yeah. And then, like, in that exchange,
anyone else would literally say yes.
So. Yes. Yeah. She said that at some point. And that elevator scene where they're just like, where he's just like, why not, or whatever. Or that's the thing, is he makes a scene, and then everyone, like, turns and looks at them, and she's like, and, like, drags him to the elevator or something, and then they have this, like, why not? And she's like, my sister's dying. Yeah, she's like, my sister's dying, and he's like, oh. Okay.
Maybe I'm the asshole.
Yeah.
Yes, Kai. You are the asshole.
Yeah. They're both, like, so sassy, too, that I actually, like, I love it. I'm like, yes. And they've only known each other for a short amount of time.
Yeah, they've only known each other. I enjoy the banter they have back and forth.
Yeah, I love it. So I think that's why I definitely, like, I shiver, like, because I'm like, I like the banter. I like the chemistry that's going on, even though we've known each other for a short amount of time, which that always happens in fairy tales, too. Like, it's always, like, insta love.
Oh, yes, I met you today. Now you must get married.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I
mentioned that when we did an episode on Tangled, which is my favorite Disney movie. I made a joke of like, even though it's a perfect movie, they still have to fall in love within 3 days because for some reason Disney never gives them longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Frozen's sort of outside take on that.
Yes.
You can't marry an animal set. Why not? You're like, okay, we get it. You guys don't like this trope. We'll address it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that self-awareness, but and I think it's sometimes it can be hard to do to like effectively create a ship that people like that care like that
the people actually
audience
ship.
Really right. ships.
Because there's what the author ships, and then there's mm-hmm. what everybody else ships.
Exactly. Right. We know enough about fandom culture.
I will say that our shippable options are somewhat limited.
That's fair.
Like, we're really only presented with Kai and Cinder.
Unless
we don't
you
know a lot of
yeah,
other.
We don't want to ship Cinder. Or
you could ship Kai and Lavanna if you really want
to. But I don't think any of us want to ship Lavanna with anyone right now.
I want to ship Kai with Dr. Erland. That's what I want. Fight me.
Oh gosh.
Forget all the problematic implications of that.
Right.
Oh boy. But I remember that you were talking about too, like, that it, we don't know how old Lavanna is at this point, but like mm-hmm. there's a kind of a creepy thing going on there with that relationship of just like, because Kai is like 18-ish. Child. Like, he's barely.
He's 18 and a half.
Yeah.
And what we do know at this point is that Lavanna has been a queen for 12 years.
And she's already been married before.
And she's already been married before.
And she tried to marry his dad. Like,
and she tried to marry his dad. So this isn't her first attempt at trying to create a marriage alliance.
Right. Yeah. And I was just like, ugh. And again, when we think about like the whole, like, she's just like swirling wine over there, like, ha 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 ha, you children. Like, ugh. Yikes.
Yeah.
It was creepy.
Lavanna is no.
Yeah. And you're reading 3.5 right now.
Yes.
And you're, yeah.
Which so, is Lavanna's story.
Which is Lavanna's story. And there's a lot of trigger warnings in several episodes.
That is a very intense book, I will say. I remember that. I remember walking away from that book being like, oh my goodness. I need to like take a break for like 3 weeks and just decompress.
Yeah. I remember first time I read it, I like kept going to my husband like, can I have a hug? And he was just like, what is going on in this book? It's just like,
yeah.
I was like, I'm just really depressed right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It'll definitely have to finish the series.
Yeah.
Yes, and it, and when you get caught up, message me so I can have you on an episode of my podcast.
Ah, for sure. That'd be fun.
Sure. Well, thank you for coming on our podcast.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
Absolutely. I think it's safe to say that we recommend this one.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say we had a good time. Bethany has obviously already sold her soul to the
series.
Yeah, to the entire series.
I mean,
to the entirity of
Risa. I'm a big fan of fairy tale adaptations. So, like, if you like this, I could recommend other fairy tale adaptations. Obviously, read everything Marissa writes, of course. But Alex Flynn, I love her fairy tale adaptations. She has a little series. They don't have to be read in order, but they do take place in the same universe, which is always cool, right? Then you can just grab one and it doesn't matter. K.M. Shea wrote one that's on Kindle Unlimited. So if you have that, it's free. And I think the books are also only like $1.99. So even if you don't, it's pretty cheap.
Nice.
And then, of course, I recommend everything by Gail Carson Levine, who's most famous for writing Ella Enchanted.
Yeah.
Ella Enchanted is actually a series, you guys. There's more than one book in there. So that's a lot to explore.
Don't know if I knew that or not. I read Fairest by her as well.
Oh, Fairest is so good.
That one is a really good one. And I've read like the Two Princesses of Mar, which I also liked.
I've read a few different
like fairy tale type of.
I would say my favorite Cinderella retelling besides this is The False Princess by Elise O'Neill. That's a very good one.
I haven't heard of that one. But that's
It's a very underappreciated one.
All right. Does anyone have any like best quotes from this book before we sign off, I guess?
I mentioned
one that Bethany mentioned earlier with the one from Kai, the heartbreaking one was good.
Gosh.
That was heartbreaking.
That was a moment, man. Like, imagine, and like, and now that I'm thinking about it too, I'm just like, you know, this is probably like Cinder's first love too. Moment.
Does she love Kai?
I mean, I don't know, but like your first crushed moment where you're just like,
yes.
You have feeling and you just like finally like recognize your feelings because they're dancing and they're like, oh, and then all of a sudden everything just blows up in your face because she thought that he liked her for her and then he doesn't actually know who she is and then he finds out who she is and then
everything's a problem.
I think I don't know about you guys, but like for me, when I was 16, I was so definitely going to marry my 16-year-old boyfriend, obviously. We were perfect for each other. Hello. I'm in my 30s now. Like, I'm an adult, and I have more experiences in the world, and I can genuinely say I've never loved anyone except my husband. But I wouldn't have told you that 9 years ago.
No, right.
You know, my perspective of love has changed. I thought I was in love when I was younger, but the connection that I have with my current partner, I've never had anything even remotely close to that. And so I can honestly say, like, I've only been in love with one person.
So my background is I'm an educator, I'm a teacher. So I know a lot of the psychology behind it. And sort of the one thing we need to keep in mind is that as teenagers are growing, this is the hardest thing they've had to deal with in life.
Yeah.
Like, sure, looking back at it as adults, like, it's no big deal that their friend said X thing, that they're no longer friends, then, because we've been through that a million and one times, and we know that it gets past and that there are much bigger things in life to worry about. They don't have that experience. And every emotional heartbreak, everything that happens is
the hardest thing, the best thing, the biggest thing. Like,
because it's the only time it's the first time they're experiencing these intense emotions.
Right. I don't know if this is juvenile, but to quote a High School Musical, high school feels like the biggest thing in the world when you're in it, but then you grow up and realize there's so much more to life.
Exactly.
I mean, that's true. Yeah, I definitely agree with that statement. Cheesy or not, you know, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of statements are cheesy, I think. I'm a very, especially if people listen to my podcast, they know this. I'm super cheesy, and I'm okay with that. I just accepted that about that myself at this point. But I do think that when you're young, you have such a different perspective of the world. And we talked about that on my podcast a lot, that at 16, Cinder is very mature and responsible in a way that she shouldn't have to be. Exactly. And that was something I connected with when I was 16. I had multiple jobs and my own apartment, and I was emancipated. So I often felt separated from my peers because I had different responsibilities. I had different expectations out of life. I had different commitments that I had to deal with that they didn't have to deal with. But for the average 16-year-old, especially in the United States, they might have a part-time job at McDonald's, but for the most part, they don't have a ton of responsibilities outside of school. And then here you've got Cinder with all this responsibility. And the same thing with Kai. Most 18-year-olds are excited about like getting their first apartment, going to college and picking out a dorm. And Kai's got the weight of an entire country and now the weight of the world and the plague antidote on his shoulders before he's even 20 years old.
Because even as a child, he's looked up to on the council that they're on, as New Beijing very much seems to be at the forefront of what the world as a whole does. So,
yeah. And I mean, I'll never have the responsibility that Kai does. In my whole life, I'm never going to have that responsibility level.
And thank God for that.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
but it means that I'll never be able to relate to him in that way. On a one-to-one peer level, but I can still relate as a reader.
Exactly.
And that kind of goes back to what you were saying, though, even though your husband like thinks that he's not doing right. I'm like, I feel like he is doing the best he can,
with the experiences that he has.
Too. I was like, well, what would you do? Your geniusness. He's 18.
Your royal highness.
Sorry, he's a child.
So he's doing the best he can. And actually, I put a note at the end of my book or whatever, it's right before the last page. Actually, it talks about how like Cinder, you know, she is about to escape, you know, she's just about to break up, but she has all these thoughts going through her head, and it's like all this jumbled information. And then it says her thoughts landed on that quiet, on that same quiet moment captured in time, Kai's carefree smile at the market, huddling in a ball, Cinder cut off the net link, the noise silenced, the images and videos snipped to black. If she didn't try to stop Levana, what would happen to Kai? And so, like, at the end of it, all this stuff just happened, and then she still's like, but what about Kai?
That love.
And I was just like, that is, yep, there it is. There's that YA moment.
That's that 16-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. This is the most important thing that happened to her right now.
But also, like, when you're 16, think about being 16 and going through your first breakup.
Mm-hmm.
You obsess over every tiny detail. Having a fight with your best friend or your mom, you obsess over every tiny detail. You think of the best comeback 6 hours later in the shower when the fight is long gone.
Wait, you're supposed to grow out of that?
Wait a minute. It's a time in your life when, and I still do that sometimes, but it's a time in your life when you're very hyper-focused. And like you said before, a lot of these experiences are very new and the emotions are very new. And I know, for example, that I was 22 the first time my husband proposed, and I was so blindsided, I didn't even know he was serious.
Oh my God.
And
oh
no. He had to propose a second time because did not realize we were engaged. And I was 22. So imagine being 16 and trying to identify, like, does he really like me? Did he not like me? Mm-hmm. What does this mean? Right. What does that mean? Like, it's a very difficult time in your life. And I think that when you're young, especially people like Cinder, who've never had anyone that's really cared about them or looked after them or loved them, really, other than maybe Peony and Aiko, why wouldn't she hyper focus on someone who gave her a little bit of
affection?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly. Feel it. Yeah, it's just, and all of us being in our like young adulthood and just having the different perspectives it's so interesting to go back and read books that we were reading when we were in high school and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Good talk about Cinder.
And thank you for having me, because I had lots of fun.
Yeah. Yes, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us.
A really great time and fun to have new insight and new perspectives on things too.
Ginny has to deal with more bullshit, not just mine. So
Let's see. What are we doing next? We're reading something else, actually.
We are doing something different next time.
Something a little different. We are reading a graphic novel.
We are.
And we're going to be talking with the author of that novel, actually.
Yes, we are, actually.
So
stay tuned on our Instagram for that, where we'll be posting more information about that thing that we are doing. And
Okay.
So we'll catch you in the next adventure.
Yeah. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Hey guys, the adventure doesn't have to stop yet. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at YAishDBC for more bookish content and the occasional cute animal pic. Have a book recommendation? What do you think of the book we're reading now? Let us know at yaishdbc@gmail.com. Of course, don't forget to check out other recommendations we have for you on Goodreads. See you in the next chapter!